The Book Thingo podcast is a lively discussion about romance books, culture, and Titian-haired heroines. This is episode 18, featuring Alyssa Cole at the Romantic Times Convention in Las Vegas. Book Thingo would like to acknowledge the traditional owners and custodians of the land on which this episode was produced, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. We also acknowledge the contributions of Aboriginal Australians to our shared literary heritage.
Welcome to the Book Thingo podcast, talking about books we love, especially romance. Kill a fairy fast on the Book Thingo podcast.
Welcome back to the Book Thingo podcast. I'm Kat Mayo from bookthingo.com.au, an Aussie blog for romance readers. Please excuse me today because I've got a little bit of a cold, so my voice sounds somewhat strange, but hopefully you can still understand what I'm saying. In this episode, I chat with Alyssa Cole, who, funnily enough, finally got me reading Filipino-authored romances. If you don't already know, I have a Filipino background, and over the years, I've asked for romance recommendations from Filipino readers, but I got very few replies back. Alyssa writes a column for the Romance Writers of America newsletter, where she looks at romance writing communities outside of the traditional markets. One of the communities she looked at was Filipino romance authors, and she opened up a whole new world of romance for me. So when I was at the Romantic Times convention earlier this year, I was dying to meet Alyssa Cole, to let her know how much I love what she's doing. And I was so happy when she agreed to chat with me for the podcast. I must apologize for the quality of the recording. We were in some kind of delivery dock, and I don't even know how we managed to find our way there. And periodically we would hear strange and random sounds. And at one point in the interview, we were asked by the staff to leave because it turns out that we were in an area that we weren't supposed to be in. So we had no choice but to talk on the casino floor. That said, I hope you'll find the patience to listen to the entire interview because I think it will be totally worth it. You can find information on all the books we talk about in this episode by going to bookthingo.com.au/podcast and clicking on episode 18.
I don't really like the term diverse. I think of it as more normal, real world.
Real
romance.
Life romance.
Like, I try to include characters from different ethnic backgrounds and different sexuality, things like that. And it's not really that I try. It's just that's what my life is like. And when characters come to me, it would be weird if everyone was just one race or one sexuality. So, I mean, in publishing, it's called diverse romance now, but I think of it as just regular romance, and I think that the way romance is now is kind of weird, so...
Undiverse.
Undiverse,
versus,
yes.
Versus
exactly.
Normal.
It should be undiverse versus right. Normal.
Well, that's interesting because now that diverse romance is getting a bit of focus in the community, at least in the online community, one of the things that I think is probably happening is some sort of generational shift where people who are used to, like, a diverse set of friends... Like, it's just natural for them to write about people who are not just white, who are from other countries, other cultures, other races, or not just from one culture, like a mix of different backgrounds.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing, and I was saying this before, but I feel like I'm a little bit privileged in this because I grew up in a very diverse area of the United States, and for a while it was the most diverse place in the United States. So most of my friends were first generation from any country you can think of. Also African American, Puerto Rican, Dominican, like just, there was a bit of everyone, white too. And for me, diversity was normal. And I do think that with the internet, with air travel, with study abroad, things like that, that more and more people are having a wider net of friends, like you said. So I do think that's having an impact on romance. And even things like social media, like Twitter. Like Twitter has been around for, since 2008 or something like that. And just like you can make so many friends just like, oh, you like this TV show and you live in Australia. I live in the U.S. We like the same TV show, but maybe we're going to meet up someday. We're going to become friends online and maybe then I'll have an Australian character. So things like that,
right.
Like just because I do think a lot of writers write from exposure. we don't really base characters necessarily on people, but it's like, oh, I've met these different kinds of people, and I thought they were cool, and they deserve stories too, so maybe a character in my book will have this combination of features from these different people. Like, it's not a very conscious thing, but that's why I think it's even more important that people are exposed to different cultures, to different sexualities, to different people. I mean, just in general, in life, I think it makes life better. But also in writing, because writers subconsciously draw from the things around them. And that's why I think, like, social media has also had an impact, as well as real-world interactions or physical interactions.
Do you think there's a template for romance that's based on old-school romance that has made it a little bit more difficult to get diverse characters into the stories? Because I remember when I was young, and you know, when you're young and you read romance and you want to write your own stories,
yeah.
I never really wrote stories of people with Filipino background, which is what I have. Even when I was in Australia, I didn't really write about Australian characters. I kind of looked down on Australian fiction. It was always American high school or, you know, workplace romance.
I do think that has an impact, because I've met so many people from, like, across the spectrum who are like, I never thought that I could write a character like me, because I didn't see that in the books. And even, it wasn't even like thinking, this won't sell, or no one will want to read this. It was just like, what you read kind of trains you, in a way.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh, everyone is white with red hair and violet
eyes. Yeah, Titian hair, violet eyes. It's amazing that we all have the same template of the ideal heroine.
So I do think that impacts people a lot, and I think, and this is another way in which social media has been really helpful, seeing people talking about diverse romance and about a variety of characters and not, like, outside of, you know, the Titian-haired, violet-eyed heroine, has made people go, oh, I can write about people who look like me, and there are people who want to read about this, and it's not strange, or it's not, like, it's the kind of making the new normal. And I do think that had a big impact. Like, for me, I never wrote white heroines.
But how did you discover romance?
I discovered romance. Oh, and I'm not saying that I will never write white heroines. But, like, so I discovered romance through my parents' bookshelf. And I started reading very early, like adult novels very early. But I actually was reading more like Stephen King, Anne Rice. But I also liked Danielle Steele, Jackie Collins. But I always fixated on, like, the romance portion relationships in those books. And at the same time, I was reading fairy tales and, you know, like Babysitter's Club and Beverly Cleary and things like that. So I always loved just the romantic stories. I love the romantic movies. And so, and I have always wanted to write. Like, my mom has the story of when I was 2 and I told her I was writing a book, and I was just, like, you know, drawing squiggles in my notebook. And so she said she always knew that I would be a writer. But I started writing romance more seriously. Like, I always wrote short stories and things like that. I started writing it more seriously and thinking about it as a possible career in 2010, maybe, because I realized that I had been holding writing up on a pedestal. It had been some thing like, one day when I'm old enough, when I've had all these experiences and blah, blah, blah. And then I realized, like, you just have to do it.
Yeah.
You can't wait for, like, someone to come and say, hey, I know
now
you've been talking. Yeah, you've been talking about writing a novel for like 15 years, and now you can do it. So I joined RWA, and I did NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month, and finished a book that I had been kind of tinkering with for a couple of years.
Is that the first book that you wrote, or was that just the first manuscript?
That was the first book I wrote
that
I finished, and that was my first book, Eagle's Heart, which is romantic suspense about the Albanian mafia and a Brooklyn school teacher.
The way you discovered romance is very similar to the way everybody else discovers romance. Was it a conscious thing where you realized you didn't see the people around you in romances, or was it just organic that when you started to write them, those are just the characters that came to you?
It was a little bit of both, I guess, and I think it was more organic, because I'm, like, I always think of, when I was younger, sometimes I would read, like, you know, in the Enquirer and magazines like that, they would have short romance stories sometimes, and, like, I remember one day I was reading it, and I got really annoyed, so I took a little whiteout marker, and I whited out all the times where it said pale skin, and I changed it to brown skin. I was like, I think I was like 9. So that I feel like was like my first moment of being like, why can't the heroine in these stories be brown? Or why can't she look like me? Or why can't she look like my friend? And so when I started writing, I guess it was conscious, both conscious and subconscious. But I always feel connected to the heroines in books I really enjoy, no matter their ethnicity. But I wanted to have that other level of connection to feel like people like me could be loved and considered lovable.
One of the things that I feel people might see or might feel when they hear about the talk around diversity is that books with diverse characters or by diverse authors are somehow more political or more issue-based yeah. than other books, whereas in fact, they're not really. Like, the aim is not to make them stand out. The aim is to make them sit in the same bookshelves yeah. and just people can pick any book and, like, not notice a difference.
Yeah, I don't think they're inherently more political. And I think there's the author, Daniel Older, DJ Older, he writes YA and spec fic. But he said every work of fiction is political. But it's basically, if it agrees with your politics, that's what makes you decide whether something is political or not. And this is something I was talking about. We had a historical fiction panel, and someone was talking about, like, issues. And some of my books are issue books, but it's just because of the time period. For right. example, during the Civil War.
But, I mean, there are a lot of books yeah. that have issues as
yeah.
well.
It's... But, like, so, for example, I'm writing a Civil War book, and some people are like, oh, people don't want to read about romance during the Civil War because it's, like, fraught and there are issues. But then at the same time, like, for example, Courtney Milan writes amazing romance, and she will have, for example, the suffragette right. scandal is the example I used. And it's about, like, you know, women being empowered, suffragettes, and, like, everyone loves a Regency blue stocking. That's a huge issue.
Are you guys employees of the Rio?
No.
Because this, you can be in here.
Okay.
At this point, we had to relocate and found ourselves in a corner of the casino. Rudy has done her best to remove the sound of the pokies in the background, but those free spin features, they are loud, so don't be surprised if you can still hear some bells ringing.
So we were talking about issues, and in historicals, I mean, the Regency time itself yeah. was in the midst of war. People were...
Yeah, people will write about, like, for example, there are the romances about the Napoleonic Wars, people, heroes coming back from that wounded... suffragettes, blue stockings, and class issues, you know, poverty versus the aristocracy. But those books, like, because we've been kind of programmed, what you read kind of programs you, like, what you think of as normal and what's not normal. So a suffragette is normal, but someone, an abolitionist is an issue.
Right.
So I think that basically any romance you read, there's some kind of issue, because that's what of most romance, like, it's not conflict. They're all conflict-based. And even the lightest romance, there can be some kind of issue that's heavier, even if it's taken on in a lighter tone. For example, there are a lot of interracial romances where the interracial aspect is not an issue at all.
Right.
It's just two people meet, and they can have a conflict about something else entirely, like someone, you know... is the small bookstore owner, and someone is, like, from the Barnes & Noble trying right. to crush it. Like, but one person happens to be Asian, one person happens to be Black. Yeah. Like, it, but...
I think it's just really breaking that template yeah. where, you know, when you first write the character, your first instinct is the red hair and the violet
yeah.
eyes, and then you just have to go, why is that my first instinct?
Yeah.
And does it have to be? Violet,
yeah,
red hair and violet eyes.
And I think, yeah, and I think that's a really important thing, is that it's not saying, like, oh, we need to change romance to tackle all these heavy things. And I think romance already tackles many heavy things, but just in a different way. But also, it's just making things more realistic. And the fact that so many people have the exact same image of a romance heroine is
yeah.
very disturbing.
I didn't realize
yeah.
that it wasn't just me, actually. And now that I've talked to so many people, and that's always the first ideal of what
yeah.
a romance heroine is.
And it's, for me, it's disturbing because, like, I mean, I love me a red-haired romance heroine.
Fiery, really, fiery.
Yeah, it's fiery hair, you know, like Judith McNaught, all of those, like, old-school historicals. I love those so much. But people internalize those things, and when people look in the mirror and see, I don't have red hair or violet eyes, and, like, maybe I'm not worthy of, like, you know, sweeping romance hero coming to save me. And people might think that's taking things a bit too far, but I really do think that media and pop culture impact people's view of themselves.
And it just reinforces some of the other messages we get elsewhere. The other thing I think is it's not even as extreme as I'm not deserving of love. It's that sense of what is an attractive person.
Yeah.
And if the only attractive people are redheads with violet eyes, it's a bit sad.
Yeah. And, like, for me, it's one thing I, like, really harp on is, like, the, like, fixation on pale skin. And I get that that is, like, a historical thing. But I feel like when you're reading historical romance and, like, the hero... Because I've read somewhere, like, the hero will go on and on about the pale beauty, innocent, how pale skin equals innocence. And then it's, like, there has to be a binary. Yeah. Like, what is the corollary to that? If pale is innocent, what is darker skin? And it's, like, again, this is not an intentional thing. The author is not trying to say that darker skin is, like, something bad. But when you fixate on it to that degree,
there's an implication.
And it's something that the reader subconsciously, like, it gets stuck in their head. Like, and they're not going to go around being like, oh, only pale skin is great. But somewhere in their brain, they have that, they now have that idea that, like,
pale skin is
great. Yeah.
So you have embarked on a project to research and talk about some of the writing communities outside of the US, where they're writing characters in their own cultures. So what have you discovered so far?
So I have a column with the Romance Writers Report, which is the publication of the Romance Writers of America. And the idea came to me basically because my husband is French. I live in the Caribbean. I've traveled a lot. I really love travel. I love learning about different cultures. And I realized that with romance, we really have this fixation on Western romance. And that's because we produce the most romance. It's not like... I think there is a reason for that. But also, I think that people all around the world have their idea of a romance. For me, I was like, we have romance writers all around the world, and we know nothing about them. We really only focus on, like, the people writing Harlequin or people who we see daily on, you know, our Twitter feed. And, like, I just thought it would be a great way of learning more about the similarities between us and the people.
And not so visible countries. In the vocal communities, I guess. Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of these people, a lot of the people I've spoken to, like, they don't necessarily always have access to internet in the same way or to the same social circles on the internet in the same way. But what, like, the thing that I have found so amazing is that even though there are, like, regional and cultural differences in some things, in many ways there are not, and this goes back to what you said again about the template, because everyone grew up reading Mills and Boone.
Right.
So everyone starts off with
the
that.
The provenance of romance reading, it seems to be very, like, we all have the same common books.
Yeah. It's really amazing to me, like, whether it's someone from Nigeria, from Kenya, from Argentina, Brazil, Philippines, everyone started reading Mills and Boone. You know, everyone loves Nora Roberts. And so they're, because romance publishing is so westernized and most other places didn't really have their own strong romance publishing industry, everyone has started with the same template. And it really feels interesting to me that, like, I feel like this is kind of a worldwide thing right now where people are like, I want to see myself in these stories. Because several people I've spoken to, I mean, people still write all different kinds of characters. People still write white characters and different kinds of characters. And
Cheeks,
that's like that. But there is this, like, I feel like within, with everyone I've spoken to, there has kind of been a bit of pushback against the template.
And but I think, do you think that that's because now we feel a bit more empowered?
I think
that
so.
That we're a bit more conscious of that?
I think so. And, like, you know, everyone still loves the books they grew up reading, but I think there is more of a sense of, I can be the heroine or hero in this book. There are people who look like me, or I can set this book in the country I grew up in, instead of it just being, like, an exotic look backdrop for a Mills and Boone, I can write a story that's actually based in the culture here and still have it be a romance.
And have similar tropes.
Yeah, and have the same tropes, have the same, like, fun and, you know, romance, the same love story, but just with the specific local flavor, or, you know, just moving away from an outsider's idea of what the place is. At the same time, many people who many of the romance writers I speak to write their characters in different places from where they live, just like, you know, just like Western romance. Like, oh, I set my book in America, and that's the same. And that's the funny thing to me, because, like, there can be this idea of the exotic, but the exotic is only viewed from the Western point of view. There, people need to realize that to other people, too, like, putting their character in, you know, New York City or the Midwest, that can be the same thing as someone being, I'm going to put my setting in Brazil.
Yeah.
So I just find all of that stuff very interesting. And another thing I find interesting is language. Most of the writers that I've spoken to write in English, not the Argentinian authors, but there's like a pretty big local Spanish-speaking romance reading population. So, and this again goes to everyone starting reading Mills and Boone, and the widespread, the way everyone, not everyone speaks English, but English is one of the most understood languages around the world, and in publishing, it's kind of more important to have your books in English.
I've heard several anecdotes around people who don't speak English as a first language using Mills and Boone as a tool to learn more English and learn the grammar.
Yeah.
Did you find that in your research? Ever get mentioned?
People haven't mentioned that, but they have mentioned that, like, you know, we learned in school, and so we could, all of the books in the library were in English. If they wanted to read a romance, they had to speak English, or read English at least, in order to read it. So many things get tied up into it, like colonialism. For example, like, I just interviewed some people from, some authors from Kenya, and, like, I was asking what language their books are published in, and, like, there was one male romance author, and he was saying how, like, you know, the books are in English, like, I can't read this other language because we weren't allowed to learn it,
right.
So I can only read and write in English. Like, it's interesting how these things affect writing overall and romance, too.
One thing I noticed in Filipino romance is colonialism is also worked out within the text. So at least in my generation, when I was living there, so that was a long time ago, and I was still a child, but the ideal, I guess, hero would have been at least partly Caucasian.
Yeah.
They would at least be mixed race. They wouldn't be pure Filipino. Whereas now, I think I'm seeing people asking for stories of characters with darker skin, heroes who are more either more Filipino or more Asian in terms of the racial mix.
Yeah.
Do you see that happening in other communities?
I do. And, like, to go back to the Kenyan authors, they launched their own, and I'm also Nigerian. There's Ankara Press in Nigeria. And Drumbeats in Kenya, and it was, and also because there's like a mix of people, like Kenya, there's South Asian, the different African tribes and or ethnic origins. So and in Nigeria as well, there are different groups, the different languages. But it was more, many people desire romance that reflects them more. Like some in the Ankara Press, they sometimes publish books in the various dialects. So that's more realistic for the readers, or more accessible for the readers. And a lot of what people have said is, we want to see, like, the same kind of stories, but with people who look like us, with conflicts that are applicable to us.
Right.
For example, like, people can read a regency, and it's like a lord who wants to marry his servant. And that's, you know, it's accessible to everyone, but maybe they want to read something about, like, for example, one of the Kenyan romances was a South Asian woman, it was interracial with a Kenyan man. And the specific things that would go into that, because that wouldn't even be the same thing as a South Asian woman in the United States and a black man in a couple, or African-American black man. So it's like many people are looking for things, like more specificity, I think,
right.
Is one of the things that's coming out of the diversity thing, diversity
is that
conversation.
That then becomes more relatable to, to the actual audience.
And it's like people, and it's like, you know, twofold, people who are not from whichever area, be it Philippines, Kenya, Nigeria, whatever, can read and learn a little bit about the area from the people living there, from the people writing there.
So like an authentic experience.
More authentic. And also the people living there can get a little more out of it. And so there's an aspect of it, this, that I call the cultural Easter egg. And it's part of, like, it's like, you know, so an Easter egg is like if you're watching a show and then, like, the showrunner puts, like, something in the background that you're like, oh, yeah, that was from, like, three seasons ago. Or something
like
that,
a bonus.
Yeah, a little bonus. So I feel like with diverse romance, there can be these cultural Easter eggs for people who are from the group or who know anything about the group or the country or sexuality or whatever, where it's like anyone can write anything, but there are sometimes like you put in a little something that when you're like someone reading it will be like, oh yeah, like that happened to me. And because cultures and people are not monoliths, everyone is not going to get it. But it's something that doesn't take away from the romance overall.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that. One of the stories that I've read set in the Philippines, I saw a comment that said, you know, nobody realizes what a sacrifice this hero made to pick up the heroine when she was running late for graduation.
Yeah.
Because the traffic in Manila is incredibly bad. And she said, you know, even my own husband, I would have told him to take the Jeep. Like, I wouldn't have done it. And so she said, I knew then it was true love. But it's something that nobody would get unless you had lived there and knew what was going on.
Yeah.
Some of these romances are written in cultures where women aren't really allowed to express sexuality in the way that we write them in romance.
Yeah.
Are there any social consequences for writers who are writing those romances?
From the people I've spoken to, I haven't spoken to anyone who's experienced anything that a romance writer in the West or in Western publishing wouldn't experience, which is people thinking, oh, romance is silly, blah, blah, blah.
Just the general stigma.
Yeah, and I'm still reaching out and speaking to other people, and I know there are some, I've recently read an article about women in, I believe it was Mali, I can't recall exactly, but writing Muslim-based romance, and it's like, you know, just selling them at the corner store, they're like just published in pamphlets, that might have a bit more restriction. But also the books, they would be a bit more tame. And I'm actually looking more to find more people. And so I am looking more into the culturally restrictive parts of things. Like, I've been trying to access, like, a Chinese romance, and that has been a bit hard, not because of the language barrier, but also just because things are different. The way people access books are different. A lot of things are online. And because of government restriction on certain things, that's something I'm looking more into writing about, more specifically, like romance in cultures where there is restricted access to, in like Saudi Arabia, places like that. But at the same time, too, I feel like people always find a way.
Right.
People always find a way, like, to find things that make them happy, to find things that get to create and to consume things that give them joy. So even in places where it's not really socially acceptable, it's there. It's just finding it.
Yeah. Your friends pass it onto the
table. Yeah, exactly.
Tell us about your next book.
Okay, my next book is going to be an anthology. It's going to be a sequel anthology to the Brightest Day anthology, and it's called Daughters of a Nation, Black Suffragette Romance. And it's basically going to just be like suffragette romance, but based in the U.S., and it's going to cover a time span of like the 1860s to the 1950s, romance, voting rights. And then I also have a Civil War espionage romance series coming out that I'm very excited about, and that's coming out in March 2017.
Oh, you're going to make us wait.
I know. I can't wait for it to come out. It's like, basically, to me, it's like fun, adventure, romance, sexy times set during the Civil War, which people think are not compatible, but so much awesome stuff was happening during the Civil War.
So I was talking to an Australian author about the lack of Australian historical romance, and I put to her that maybe it's because it was such a tough time.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know what, even though it was tough, people still fell in love.
Yeah.
So there are still stories to be told.
And there are so many amazing stories. Like, doing historical research, I keep finding things, I'm like, oh, that would be cool, and that would be cool. Because, like, I mean, aside from the adventure and, like, what the crazy things people did, like, on both sides of the war, I'm writing about the Union, from New York, pro-Union, also black, so yeah, from the Union. So just, like, the spying, the lengths people went to, and also there's so much, because people don't like talking about that period in history, they gloss over a lot of things.
Because there was so much conflict within the country.
Yeah, so they kind of make it this one story when there were so many different stories and so many interesting things.
You know,
happening.
I'm like dying to make a Hamilton reference, but I'm going to restrain myself.
I've been restraining myself like the whole conference, like limit your Hamilton romance.
No, you're in that historical romance. Yeah. We're like, we're going to that. There's a Hamilton reference. We don't even know what it's about, but we're gonna go.
So I'm really excited about this series, and it's basically about African American. Well, not only African American, but it's a diverse look at the people who participated in the Civil War and who helped the Union win the Civil War. And the first book is about a black woman, and it also a lot of it is based on real history. So it's about a black woman who is free, and she goes back into slavery because she has a photographic memory. She goes back into slavery to pose as a slave.
So she's like a spy.
Yeah, because with her photographic memory, she can just look at all the files and then report back to the Union what's going on in Richmond. And the hero is a Scottish spy for the
Union. Tell me he wears a kilt.
He doesn't wear a kilt because he's posing as a Confederate.
Oh, okay.
But
I guess there's a good reason.
I'll try and work a kilt.
Yes,
I'm writing a
tartan, like, I don't know, coverlet. I don't know what they call it.
I love Scottish heroes. In the second book, it's his brother. And, like, the series, I have a whole, plan for the series. The series is basically going to cover the arc of the Civil War. From different perspectives in different places, but just romance, of course, in all of the books. And it's coming out from Kensington. It's called An Extraordinary Union.
March 2017. It sounds fantastic.
And that's it for today's episode. Huge thanks to our amazing audio producer, Rudy Bremer, who, by the way, is also a huge Alyssa Cole fan. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to this podcast as much as we did. You can find the show notes at bookthingo.com.au/podcast. Just click on episode 18. If you have any feedback or suggestions, you can send me a tweet at bookthingo or send an email to podcast@bookthingo.com.au. Like Nancy Williams, who tweets as Cats Are Best. She wrote, "Wonderful podcast with Tessa Dare. Insightful book info and new tidbits on upcoming Do You Want to Start a Scandal?" Thank you so much, Nancy, for your kind words and for taking the time to send us your feedback. If you enjoyed the podcast, you can help support us by leaving a review on iTunes or just telling all your reader friends to give us a try. You can also visit bookthingo.com.au to check out reviews and opinions from a bunch of readers from down under, including me and Rudy. In the next episode, I interview an author whose book is so prized that used copies will set you back over $100. Sherry Cobb South wrote a book called Wrong Way Romance for the Sweet Dreams imprint in the early 90s. It remains on hundreds of keeper shelves around the world, so make sure you don't miss the next episode. Until then, I hope you have a fabulous fortnight of reading.